February 22nd, 2012. Usually, I was just telling Tommy Lawson, I don't talk to the guest before the show. I want it to be spontaneous. I want him to just charge out of the starting gate like a thoroughbred horse. But you know what? After 5 years, I'm realizing that doesn't happen. And I was on the Drive-Thru HR show about a week ago, and they chatted with me before the show started. I didn't really need it, but I thought that might be nice. So he seems like a good guy. He just told me he's the gloves-off guy in the employment background checking industry. So hopefully it'll be good. But what I want to do right now is tell you about something that was sent to me by Quora. You know, I'm suspended on Quora because they don't like my name, but they send me email, and there was a discussion called How to Recruit on Twitter. And some dope there gave this advice. He said, recruit by building your brand. Instead of tweeting about jobs, tweet about how you're changing the world. Get people excited about what you're doing. Well, I don't know about you. This is me again, not him. How many people are really excited about what their company is doing? I know some recruiters who force themselves to be really excited about everything they're working on, and it's always, when they call a candidate, it's always a great job. The company's always doing amazing things. Candidate, they'll say, my client is working on a new corking technology that's going to revolutionize the bottle cap. Isn't that amazing? Are you ready to join the revolution? Well, they think it's amazing. Those recruiters think it's amazing because they want to make money by placing you. But who else is going to think that's amazing? Nobody! Getting hysterical about something that isn't really exciting, it's just going to turn off your audience. So going back to Quora, this guy goes on. He says, the best people already have good jobs and they aren't looking to move. You turn them off with job postings. But I had to ask myself, why should that turn them off? If you post jobs in their field, why shouldn't they want to see them? And then he comes back to this. But you can engage them with news about the awesome things you're doing. And once you have a community of people passionate about your company, mention your hiring and they'll come running. I'd like to see some examples, but there weren't any. Of course not. That's another great tip from social media. But we got great tips for you today. You know what? It screwed me up by talking to this guy before the show. I come out of the gate usually all excited, but then I had to be a nice guy to him before it came on. I don't like that. Anyway, Jerry, what show is this? Where's Jerry? Oh, there he is.
The recruiting animal
It's not my fault. Just ask
yes,
my
it
wife.
Is. It's your fault. Now, look, the guest today is Tommy Lawson. Lots of the regulars, they're not coming today. Maureen's got something more important to do. Jerry's going to see Van Halen or something. Mike Aestringer, not here. Job board doctor, he's going to go to True London. But anyway, I'm going to talk to Tommy Lawson, my guest, from, what's it called, App Screen or AP Screen?
App Screen, short for Applicant Screening Company of America.
Okay, so that's on Twitter, that's AP Screen. And what's your website, apscreen.com?
www.appscreen.com.
Okay, now I'm going to, usually, you know what, my guests, they're really bad at introducing themselves, so I'm going to introduce you. And I'm going to tell you, feel free to interrupt whenever you want, okay?
Yep.
So I was reading stuff on your website. I got to tell you something. You got a list of articles there. Some of them are dead links. You should go and fix that up. It always looks really bad to me. Okay?
Good. Now, great advice.
Okay. You got a case of a guy named Davy Becker. Now, he inherited money from his mother. He and his brother inherited $2 million, but the mother made it by investing with Bernie Madoff. And this created a conflict of interest for him because he was a senior guy in the SEC and he was investigating Madoff. Now, his boss knew about it, the SEC chairperson, Mary Shapiro, so she told him to go and get approved by the ethics commissioner, but the ethics commissioner reported to him. So there was another conflict of interest. So even for this high-level person, they should have hired somebody to check him out. Is that true? And it, you know, that's an introduction to what you do. Go ahead. Run
well,
with that.
Most government, unbeknownst to most people, is incestuous. Basically, government is a place to go if you can't do anything else. And so you have people that rise to the top with really very little qualifications, and they're bringing in nepotistic attitudes, and they're bringing in their friends and their family and their relatives. And that holds true for all levels. It isn't just in the lower echelons of clerical work. It's all the way up to the top. And I've followed that case, and I see it as absolutely no different than anything that happens every single day, all day, in every aspect of government. Should there be a watchdog? Absolutely. Should it be an independent third-party verification service? Absolutely. But who qualifies that? Who qualifies that vendor? Who is the person that person's going to hire watch themselves?
Okay, yeah, okay, enough. Here we got your opinion. Okay! Now I'm going to go on. We'll go. I'll let you get going. I'm happy to see you want to talk, but I have to control you, okay?
Hey,
I'm
ready.
I've got an audience, and I know what they like! Now look, I've been watching some British Mr. Murder mysteries on YouTube lately. There's a lot of good stuff there. And anyway, when they're investigating the murders, there's always two guys. There's a detective inspector and a detective sergeant, the junior guy. And when they're investigating something and a name comes up, the boss, he always looks at the junior guy and says, go find out who she is. Go check this person, right? So you're kind of like a junior detective for employers. Is that right?
Well, I wouldn't quite put it that way. I'm the guy who keeps the wolves away from the door.
You're
in
a
that context,
file clerk. Come on, admit it. All you do is go check files. Isn't that true?
Nah. We have to analyze them. You got to be a librarian, not a clerk.
Okay, actually, that's kind of interesting. I'll just go on a little more with my intro. And because you said a minute ago, all levels have to be checked. But in the reading I've done for this show, it's mostly low-level workers that they're talking about. I found another story up from your blog. In 2005, a cable repairman visited a young man's home. I don't know why they said young man. They visited this customer's home to do internet service repairs. While he was there, he killed the customer. And now the customer's family, you know, is doing a civil lawsuit against the company because they didn't do a good background check on this guy. This repairman had 12 prior felony convictions and should not have been allowed to visit customer homes. That's more the typical problem, isn't it, at that level, not the senior levels?
No, it happens at all levels. Crime doesn't delineate by paycheck, for crying out loud.
Okay, let's let a headhunters call into this show.
Uh-huh.
And so we're, you know, placing managers, directors, VPs, senior design engineers, people like that, professionals, and middle to high senior level managers. Do you have any stories just off the top of your head that would fit into that category? Because I read a lot of your stuff and I couldn't find it.
Well, the majority of the expert witness cases that I handle primarily attribute to lower-level employees who go out and create horrible crimes, and then they're prosecuted, thrown into jail, and then the families end up suing the company for negligent hiring, for example. But on the Bernie Madoff case, which I've had several different aspects of in my career in dealing with not only his customers and recovering some of the money that he stole from his people and from his clients, but some of his vice presidents and that sort of thing. One of the best answers to your question, Michael, is to look clearly at the law. The law provides that a background check pretty much can be unlimited on a salary that's over $75,000. So,
what does that mean, unlimited?
Well, if you want to go do a civil litigation check, for example, where you wouldn't do it on a clerk or a janitor, you might want to do it on a CEO or a CFO. You want to make sure that guy hasn't been sued all over the map. Make sure that his companies haven't sued him for financial recovery.
Okay. When I say stop, you stop, okay?
You just got it.
Give me an example of a search you've done for someone at the level of a design engineer or, you know, a project engineer?
You want me to name names, or you want to just give you an overview?
No, I don't want
example?
Names. You don't have to name names. I just want a story. Do you ever do at that level? You just said most of your court cases are for guys who get hired in a health food store and then live in an air conditioning vent, and when they're told to get out, they kill the guy who tells them. And then if they would have done a check on that guy, they would have seen that, you know, he was a murderer. Right?
He was a manager. So you just, that is an answer to your question. That guy wasn't just an employee. He was actually the health club manager.
Okay.
So there you
okay.
go.
You're not answering this question. I'll move on. You say on your blog that reference checks, the normal reference check, sucks. Am I right? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
You said in the last 32 years of your experience, I don't know why, you said you founded this industry. An industry is when you make something. An industry is not checking files. A librarian is not an industry. It's the wrong word. It's a line of business, okay? So anyway, so for the last 32 years, 80% of the time, the reference check fails. Now, again, I got a feeling you're talking about a different level of person. Although staffing companies where they hire masses of people, they're different than headhunters. That might fall into your realm. But anyway, when you say reference checks suck, what are you talking about?
A reference check sucks primarily because the people trying to conduct the reference check do not follow through. They can't. They don't get the phone answered. They don't get a return phone call. So after four or five tries, they just give up. And primarily in the recruiting and the temporary staffing and the permanent staffing industries, references are primarily the background check that is conducted. Very few of them actually do a factual background check for credit histories, driving histories, criminal histories, et cetera. So
no,
the reference
that's
check...
Outside. That's outside. I just got to interrupt
right.
you. That's outside. I never do that stuff. But if there's a reference check for a guy who's going to make $100,000 a year... I do very thorough reference checks.
Well, you're unique. Not everybody does a thorough reference check. Most people give up. Now, if that job is specifically dependent upon the reference check, you can't give up. But reference checks, for the most part in the recruiting game, are secondary. They're not primary. It's something to bolster the sales pitch or presentation to the client about that candidate.
Okay, so you don't respect recruiters very much, it sounds like to me.
Sure,
you
I do.
I
respect a recruiter that follows the specification that he's been given in order to fill the position. Recruiters have to make a buck. They have to make a living. They're wonderful people because they actually stir the pot. They get things moving. They move people around. They get people placed in jobs where people are needed in those jobs. I think recruiters are a critically essential part of the American workplace.
Okay, social media, you say. The social media checks, they also suck, right?
Terrible. Worst part of it. You bet.
Go ahead. You run
how
with
do
that.
How do you validate or verify something on social media?
Well, for guys, the big thing is people put pictures of themselves up there at a party where they're kind of drunk. That's a big deal, right?
Well, how do you tell if a guy's drunk in a picture? I mean, you can't tell that all the way. The problem is that the statements that are made on it, you know, this is Charlie sitting on my lawn at 3 a.m. after smoking 10 tons of grass. Well, how do you know that that isn't somebody who just hates that guy or is competing with him for that job?
Okay, so if you rule somebody out on the basis of a social media search, can you get sued for that?
Sure you can, because it's not validated based on Fair Credit Reporting Act, and you have to have updated and verified information in order for you to convey it. Now, if you are the employer and you're looking at social media, you can pretty much do whatever you want to do. Are you being fair to the candidate? Absolutely not. If the recruiter is relying upon social media, the recruiter should say, this is what we have found. These are the things that you need to look at, not what I'm telling you we found, and you need to make your own decision. But anybody who gets in the middle of the employer, between the employer and social media, and then relays it is violating the Fair Credit Reporting Act.
Okay, so let's go right to it now. Now tell us, what do you check? I'm gonna list some of them. Just doesn't sound like you'd have a problem, but I'll list some. Whatever I miss, you fill me in. Now, it seems to me from reading a lot of your material that the first big thing is verifying that the person is who she says she is. Is that right? Am I saying the right thing?
You said it beautifully, Michael. Positive candidate identification. 60% of the applications we get have false or omitted information on the face of the application. Well, how am I supposed to conduct a criminal check on Janie Sue Jones if her name is also Janie Sue Smith and I don't find Janie Sue Smith as a name. I'm going to miss all the criminal convictions under that name, aren't I?
Well, do people use false names a lot?
60% of the time we get applications every day that show false or omitted information. 40% of the time they are undisclosed alias names. 40%,
okay, like a,
and it's growing.
Like if your name is really Bob Jones, but you're using Jerry Smith, or is it somebody who's got married and is using a married name? Is that the main issue?
No, it's both. It's about 50-50. It used to be about 80% undisclosed married names or maiden names for married women, but now it's about 50-50. There are so many people who are blatantly willing to disclose false names and do whatever they can to create a new identity for themselves to hide their past, you wouldn't believe it.
Really? Okay, there's one other issue. Like some immigrants from China, for instance, they're smart, and they take an English name in addition to their Chinese name to make
you
it
bet.
Easier for people to deal with them. Is that, I consider that legitimate. Is that hard on you?
Not necessarily, because your Social Security number is always going to relate back to the original base name, so that's going to come back. The real hard ones are Vietnamese people. Do you know about the name Nguyen, N-G-U-Y-E-N?
No.
At some point in time in history, there was a ruler in Vietnam that stood up and said, everybody whose name isn't Nguyen is going to be executed. So everybody changed their name to Nguyen.
Okay, I didn't know that name. I thought it was No or N-G-H-O or something is the big name there. Anyway, just like Lee in China, Lee's a big – everybody's got the same last name or
right.
A lot of Lees or Chungs. Anyway,
sure.
The number two thing is verification of past employment and education. Is that number two?
Well, that's in the referencing side of it. Number two would be criminal convictions, driving histories, things that further.
Okay,
further.
So let's start with driving history. Why do you want to check someone's driving history if they're not going to be a driver?
Well, there's two main reasons. First of all, how are they going to get to work if they have no driver's license because they've lost it for a drunk driving, number one? And number two, if they did get a drunk driving, how do you know they aren't going to be drinking on the job? Drunk driving is a tremendous societal attitude indicator, according to Stanford Research back in the 70s. So DUIs are a critical component in determining how a person is going to perform on the job, because most people who drive drunk are willing to work drunk.
Okay, and this at senior levels as well?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. Are you like a cop who's seen all these bad things and you have a kind of a negative view of people?
Not at all. 32 years in the employment screening business with 7,000 clients, I've seen a whole lot of different background checks performed. I'm not really cynical. I still believe in people. But the truth of the matter is, these days, especially in bad economic times, people are willing to lie because they are hungry. They are starving.
Okay.
They want to feed their families.
So is drunk driving the only thing, or parking tickets isn't an issue, right?
You know, it depends on what the policy of the client is. Some clients don't like parking tickets because they think if they don't pay their parking tickets, they're not going to turn their reports in on time.
Okay. And what about criminal past? What do you do? What's involved in a check? And maybe you can tell me a real story without at the kind of level I'm most interested in, without telling the person's name or anything like that.
Well, okay, well, you want me to take you through, run you through how a solid criminal check works?
Yeah.
Okay, first and foremost, as we discussed, you have to identify the candidate. You got to know exactly who you're dealing with. Second thing is you want to go to as many repositories as you can to unearth information.
How do you identify a candidate? Let me ask you that. How do you identify a candidate?
We use between 9 and 21 steps to identify the candidate. We use Social Security traces from the three major credit bureaus, address updates, voter registration. We use proprietary blends of different databases that unearth identity information attributable to just about everybody in the United States.
I don't understand anything you said. It just went by so fast.
Okay.
I don't know. But let me just comment on something. I don't have anybody looking at the Twitter chat for me, but Resume Strategy said something true. Last week, you know, I've had people, they come call me and they complain that the group, the guys are interrupting too much and they never understand what the discussion is about because it's all over the place. And then I got other people saying, you know, your callers, the couch, the animal crew, they're the best thing about the show. And I agree with that too. So last week on Twitter, Mitch Sullivan and Resume Strategy said, why don't you take an intermediate view? Don't get rid of the callers and don't let them bury you. Just talk to the guest for a while yourself and then bring the callers on after a while. They said, Jerry Albright is on from 1 o'clock to 1:30. One to 1:30, he's leading the show. So why don't you cut him out of the first half of the show? You'll be able to talk for a few minutes without interruption, and then he can come on for the last half hour, the last hour, actually. So I'm doing that resume strategy. I took your advice. I don't know if people can understand me, but the people who are calling in and listening, they'll have a chance in a few minutes. This is a revolutionary show, Tommy. I just want you to know. You know, Tommy Boy was a big movie when you started this business of yours, wasn't it? Did you see that?
I started in 1980. I don't think Tommy Boy was out in 1980, but then
you're
older than me,
Tommy Boy wasn't right until 1992 or 1990 or something like that. You're right. Okay. So anyway, you check the criminal past. And you know what? You had a lot of stuff on your website saying that there's cheap checks of databases and they're no good because the data, when you bring it in, you're going to lose about 5 to 8%. When you transfer the data from one database to another, just the language that they're written in or something like that is so different that you drop, there's a data drop. So if you just go the cheap route, you're going to miss out. Am
yep.
I right about that?
You're
going to miss important information.
100%.
Can you give any examples of what you're talking about there?
Well, sure. About 60% of the employment screening industry would like to sell you a background check for $29 in about 30 seconds, and you get what you pay for. You cannot conduct a background check thoroughly unless a pair of eyeballs is on the file from soup to nuts. You've got to go to the court clerk's counter in the jurisdiction where there's a conviction or where there's activity or where the person lived in order to get the ultimate answer as to whether or not there is a conviction in that county or that jurisdiction against the person. These databases cover vast amounts of counties. There's over 4,600 jurisdictions in the United States. But there is not one database company that covers all of them and not one database company that covers all the records in the jurisdictions that they even have because the nature of that beast is not to update it daily like it updates when you go to the court. It's to sell something quick and get something out there with a lot of sizzle, not much steak, but a lot of sizzle.
Okay, so are you a nationwide – I mean, if you have to go visit the court yourself for every search – that's an enormous amount of work, isn't it?
Sure, but we have over 1,500 researchers that are in all the courts throughout the United States every day.
So what did you do? Start regionally? I mean, if you started the business 30 years ago, you didn't have the manpower to go around to every court, right?
Yeah, we started in Los Angeles County. We had a pretty good aerospace clientele, which was a little higher grade of background check, of course. And we would acquire our records, and we would go down to the courts every day. Then I started to hire researchers. And at one point, I had 54 researchers throughout California covering all 57 jurisdictions. And then we branched out into other states because some of our clients had branch offices in other states.
Okay,
and,
okay. Now, I read on your site about a story about the Flying Biscuit Cafe. They hired a guy who killed the pregnant manager while he was robbing the store at nighttime. It was in Charlotte, North Carolina. You remember
yep.
that story?
Sure.
Okay. So anyway, they quoted in the story Kenny Colbert, the president of the Charlotte-based Employers Association. He said, so the store, the Flying Biscuit, they got sued by the family of this killed woman. She was
yep.
pregnant, and so they were sued because they didn't do a proper background check, and people who have a felony conviction within the last 3 years, they're banned from serving alcohol in that state. So this guy fell into that category, and they shouldn't have had him on that job. So Kenny Colbert says the cost of a full screening is usually about $50, but there's some for North Carolina only that go for as little as $10. Kenny doesn't know what he's talking about based on what you said, right?
Well, I don't know.
You don't want to diss Kenny. Do you have the guts to go gloves off, like you said, and say that Kenny Colbert, who might be a personal friend of yours, for all I know, he's wrong, right?
I don't know Kenny Colbert. There's ways to take the gloves off, Michael. One way to take the gloves off is to slap a guy silly and do it softly. I don't know what his pricing strategy was. I do know that there are jurisdictions that add a price to their to the ability to go into the court and search the record. There's the fee structure for the employment screening provider. But if a guy says that you can do a thorough background check for $50, I don't know if that's true in his county. If that is, if he charges that for one county or whatever. We charge a flat rate for the for each background check that we conduct, which is turning over all the rocks, and then if you have to go to additional counties, you're going to pay additional fees.
Okay, how much? You want to say?
It depends. In New York, for example, I think you pay, there's a flat rate for most of the New York counties of $50, which is a statewide search, and I'm quoting that loosely. I don't know exactly what the dollar amount is now, but the price varies for each jurisdiction. A good employment screening company charges you a flat service fee for going to the jurisdiction or sending their researcher to the jurisdiction, and then the researcher gets back and charges his fee plus whatever the disbursement is to the jurisdiction. So, for example, Los Angeles County, you pay $5 for a criminal records check. And then you're going to have to pay the guy $15 to go get it for you. So we include, if your search is primarily in Los Angeles County, that's included in our fee. We don't add a thing to that. But if you have to go to Orange County or any other county, you're going to pay another $25 for that county, and that's going to include the fees unless the fees exceed that amount.
Okay, I'm lost. You know, I have trouble. I think I might have ADD or something like that.
No. Here's your problem, Michael. You don't understand the public record research business, and you, like probably everybody, are wrapped up in thinking, well, why in the hell can't I get everything for $3? In the end, what you can get is what you're willing to pay for the search to be done properly and be conducted thoroughly at the jurisdiction. You can go directly, or you can hire a third party like myself to go out and research it for you because we know what we're looking for, and you may not.
Okay, I open the lines. Does anybody have a question for Tommy?
I do.
Go ahead, Janice. Exec job coach. She's a job coach, Tommy. And I told people, and this is Janice, just one sec. I warned people on Twitter that they should be afraid of a guy like you. I'm afraid of you already. So go ahead, Janice. Ask your question.
Arrange. We're thinking of hiring you. Arrange. What do you charge?
Our basic starting rate is $75 without an employment credit report. Add $10 for an employment credit report. If you were to add services, for example, if you had additional counties to check for three levels of searches for felony misdemeanors, convictions at the federal, state, and local level, you add $25 per jurisdiction.
Okay, so you're basically not going into former employers and making phone calls and things like that, are you?
Sure, we charge $12 per reference.
Okay, all right.
And that's verification plus, for example, plus your fees for the work number or talks or any of the services which carry the prior employer information.
What about education verification?
Same thing, it's $12. We, in our business, we call a reference or a verification a per-line service, and each one that we do is $12 per line. We are relentless. We don't stop until we get it. A lot of people charge you $10, but they only make 5 attempts. We don't stop.
So then, if someone wants a complete background check, being standard, therefore not being like a top secret check or anything like that.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like, you know, there's a lot of different separate fees. Approximately how much would it be for a standard check for education, employment verification, criminal, all of that together, let's say in San Diego?
So let's say you're saying that your candidate has lived in San Diego all their lives. That part of the search is $75. If they went to one college, that search is $12. If they worked at two jobs, you'd have two searches at $12 for $24. So you're looking at approximately $36 plus $75.
Okay, so there's no standard set fee if they lived. There's no, like, a package fee, let's say.
Sure there is. Sure, if you have volume, you give me volume, we can have a package fee. Our aerospace clients do that, where they run hundreds and hundreds of backgrounds per month, and they want a little bit more predictability. But the trouble is that every applicant is different. Every applicant is, you know, you might have one candidate that's lived in San Diego all their lives. You might have the next candidate in the next hour of interview that's lived in 9 different counties, and those counties need to be checked if it's within the last 5 to 7 years, depending upon what state you're in.
You know, we've got people right now that are very shocked at your 60-40 percentage, 40% aliases, 60% falsification. I just want to say one thing. We have a major university here, and I literally had two gentlemen.
He doesn't know where you are. You're in Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio.
Okay.
Wasn't going to say that. I literally had two people come in to me to have resumes prepared within a year who both claimed to be the director of food service for this major university. Same job, two different people. One of them did not hold that job.
Thank you for making my point.
Yeah, but the question, this is Nate here. So the question that seems to be coming in from the blogosphere here from everyone that's out there is where is this number, the 60% number that you're coming up with, what you are seeing from your organization? Or,
yes.
Or, okay, so I mean, so that's specific to you. Is there a particular client base that you work with or something? See, I use a company. I've used a number of them. I use PEI, which is Private Eyes Investigation. I've used Castle Branch, you know, and I've been doing this for 15 years, and I use the full scope. You know, I pay between $100 to $200.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's all a la carte, depending upon where our people are. But I've never run into this. I mean, I occasionally, maybe one out of five people, will get someone who just has an AKA, but that AKA is just something that's, you know, one slight name over, and I just tell them, okay, we'll run that AKA. So, I mean, but I mean, I've run across people who have bad backgrounds, but I don't see 60% being a valid number. I mean, are you dealing with client that that's there? Or?
No. I'm saying that it's 60% omitted or misrepresented information. Actually, more so than alias names, or at least equal to alias names, is undisclosed prior addresses. That's the big bugaboo, is where they have been. They won't tell you where they've been. They won't tell you if they've had a criminal conviction check. They won't tell you, you know, criminal conviction. If you ask them to answer the criminal question on the questionnaire, they'll say they may circle yes and then not add detail to what they were convicted of. So we consider that all of that the omissions. That's what goes.
All right, so
60%.
Let me ask you the question straight up. So if you're claiming 60% of the people there have misrepresented information, of that 60%, what percentage of them are actually popping, and what percentage of them are actually people just maybe forgetting an address that they had in the last?
Good question.
That's a
great question.
Yeah, that's correct. That's a great question. My only answer to that is an omission is an omission, whether they willfully omitted it or forgot about it. It is an omission to us, and that omission is that key is very, the term is very, very important, because I have to go back to my client and I have to say to them, for whatever reason, we identified three places they live that they didn't tell us about. Then we leave it up to the client to determine, hey, you know, I interviewed the guy and he seemed a little bit dishonest, so I think he probably purposely omitted that information. Or conversely, he says, gee, I thought that lady was the most honorable person I ever sat and interviewed, and I think she probably just forgot. So, again,
the question still stands. Forget whether or not people think that they're good or people think that they're bad. You're the guy who's on the other end who's checking
sure.
these people's background checks. What percentage of the people that are out there who have omitted information truly ended up having something pop?
Maybe we have to change the terminology here and just say, what percentage have you found are lying about stuff on their applications? Just blatantly saying things that are not true. Whatever.
What if they're not lying about it, but it shouldn't pop and it does?
Well, okay, that's a
ballpark
loaded. You're asking me how many times have I spoken with a client that's disclosed to me that the person either willfully omitted the information or may have mistakenly omitted? I don't have a statistic for that. All I go on is what I find versus what they've told us.
Up on the omitted part. I'm just curious what percentage. Let's simplify and just say, that of information that they've put down on there, what percentage of that percentage of the time you do these checks do you find that something is actually false, not omitted, just
well,
false?
The better question is how careful are we at deciphering the information that we are taking to match what they did or did not give us? Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I'm saying? How much veracity is there in the information that we are looking at? How dependent upon are we upon the information that we're looking at with regard to what we consider an omission? Well, if we find an omitted prior address, for example, we will go back. We do not report that to a client unless we have three independent verifications that address attributes to that candidate, or that name attributes to the candidate. So there are three tests we have to meet before we're going to make the assertion that there is an omission. you can go to the raw data sources and you can probably find that 80% of the omissions are there, but what you have to account for is the duplication that exists within the different repositories that you're looking at in order to validate the identity of the candidate. Does that answer your question?
But the omission in and of itself is not a problem unless there's some kind of criminal activity that's taking place based upon something different.
Yeah, I guess you guys are just talking around stuff. Let me ask a question. Wait a second.
How about just a lawyer?
What's all this stuff about past addresses? What do I care where the guy lived before? Do you ask for people's how many addresses do you want them to give you?
7 years prior addresses, because we have a 7-year window upon which to report criminal convictions in California, for example, even though the federal law is loosened up on that. We want to know if they're going to tell us where they lived over the last 7 years. If they've not told us a place that they've lived and it's outside of their primary jurisdiction, they might not have told us that information because there's a criminal conviction out there waiting to be discovered. So there is a natural reason for bad people to omit prior addresses. We consider omission the single most important aspect of our program. Now, I want to say one thing to all of you. It's very important to understand our process is very, very detail specific. We design our process to trap the applicant. We are looking for that person to make ultimate disclosure because we feel the lack of disclosure directly attributes to their character. We do that based upon the Minnesota Multiphasic Personality Inventory Exam that was invented back in 1948, which says specifically you put your best foot forward in an employment setting, and if you omit or lie or snake around on the facts, there's a good chance you're going to do the same thing when you're on the job. So we would like to help our clients eliminate candidacy based on omission.
So purely based upon omission,
anybody...
not necessarily something happening when they were there. So if
I forgot
for a 4-week period that I lived in New Hampshire versus Massachusetts, you would prefer that I not be hired even though something may not pop in New Hampshire. When you get that omission, are you then running that background check in New Hampshire to see and then reporting to say, well, there's nothing there?
Yes, if my client authorizes it, absolutely. We'll call the client and say, you know, there's a 4-week period of time we've identified that person lived in New Hampshire. Do you want to discuss this with them or do you want us to go back and research it? We give the client the opportunity to go back to the candidate and say, hey, how come you forgot about this address or how come you didn't tell us about this address? And then they watch their reaction and see how the candidate responds.
Okay, I have to ask you some more questions. Now, there's a whole issue here about discriminating against protected classes of people, or we got a lawyer who comes on occasionally, disparate impact. It's going to affect – this kind of stuff is going to affect some people more than others. And there's a protest, isn't there, with the government that criminal background checks and credit history, these things should not be used because – they're going to rule out a lot of people.
Well, credit histories have been banned in several states, California being the most recent, of course, as of this year. The EEOC has declared war on the background check industry because they believe that it's a bad idea to use criminal conviction records in the employment screening process. Now, the primary impetus for these pursuits on the part of government is that because we're very effective in the background screening industry, we have created a class of people that many in the government feel are unemployable. So as a result, they're taking aim at us, saying, well, we would rather just see you as the problem rather than that person's background as the problem.
Okay, so it's going on, and you just disagree with them, right?
Well, if I'm going to do business with somebody, I want to know who I'm doing business with. I want to know with whom I am dealing. And if I'm going to place a person or hire somebody, I want to know that I'm not hiring a murderer or a rapist or a thief. And I have the right to know that.
But you took the question to another step, you know. I think the question that we came up with from our perspective is that there's a number of states that are out there who have passed laws saying that if you are not in a position to control financial details for an organization, a credit check should not be reported. What are your opinions in regards to that?
Well, you know, 32 years ago when I started this company, I did a lot of research to find out what would be really important components to include in a background check. And this is before most of the privacy laws. This is when we had the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which was started Title VI in 1971. It was a loose law. And I looked to the guidance of the aerospace industry, which was my primary client base, and they use basically the same background check strategies and philosophies that a police department would use in order to qualify a policeman. So the standard that I purvey, if you will, is to look at a person on the whole. For example, yes, there may be no activity financially. There's no fiduciary position with a person in a particular company. But if that person is going home at night and at 5:40 in the evening, his phone starts ringing with creditor or collection agency calls, and those calls go up till 9 or 10 o'clock at night, and he's fraught with distress all night long and doesn't sleep because of his financial problems, he isn't going to be as effective an employee as a person who doesn't have those problems. That's just basic human nature. Now,
he also doesn't meet his commitments. I mean, there's more to it than statistics. It's the nature of the human being.
Well, that, you beat me to it. I hadn't quite gotten there yet. But, again, I go back to Stanford Research Institute, and I go back to Ford Institute, where they did studies that determined that the two primary societal attitude indicators exist in a driving history and a credit report. If they aren't willing to meet their obligations, if they're not willing to uphold and maintain their commitments, the main position in the EEOC with the credit report thing, for example, is, well, there's a disparate impact against blacks because blacks don't necessarily have as good a credit report as whites do. Well, my position is, and I maintain this, I don't care if you're black, white, brown, or purple. If you don't pay your bills, you don't pay your bills. If you aren't able to pay your bills, you shouldn't get into the trouble in the first place, and that displays kind of a bad attitude about commitments and obligations. So there is, in my opinion, no disparate impact other than statistically speaking, and statistics can be manipulated, and statistics are basically not applicable in this situation. If I lend you $100 and you don't pay me back, you're a scumbag. I don't care what color you are.
Okay. Now, there's some other stuff as well that's out of bounds. Not all information, even in, like we're talking about credit checks and things, there's other things like unadjudicated arrest records. What's that?
That means that there are arrest records that have not resulted in a conviction. We don't report arrest information. You cannot in the state of California. And in several states, dude, they have the same types of laws that we have under 432.7 of the California Labor Code. But in generally speaking, it's not a good idea unless it's a nuclear facility or a daycare facility or a law enforcement agency. You don't want to report arrest because those are unadjudicated. You don't know if the guy really actually did the crime. So you can't really rely upon that arrest information as an indicator of that person's
you know what?
Attitude.
I would say the opposite. If someone's arrested, lots of times they can't convict them. That doesn't mean he wasn't guilty, right?
Well, sure, but you know what you do? You're going to look at the number of arrests in that situation, and you're going to basically advise your client, hey, you know, there's some things I can't tell you, but there's been a lot of things that lead us to suggest to you that you ought to consider other candidates.
I have a question.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Has what you can ask on an application to a candidate changed? I thought it used to be, have you ever been convicted of a felony? We are now getting, have you ever been charged with, convicted of misdemeanors, all kinds of, did you plead no contest? I mean, has that changed? Can companies do more than they used to be able to do on these things, or are
No.
they just doing it?
No, absolutely not. The truth is that a crime is a crime. It's really dependent upon the policy of the enterprise. For example, there are some people that just say, I don't want to know anything other than felony convictions. I have a client that's a trucking company, and they really don't care about misdemeanors, primarily because most people who are truck drivers have committed misdemeanors at some point, right? So they don't care about misdemeanor activity. They do care about certain misdemeanors that have led to felonies or compound misdemeanors or egregious misdemeanors that have been downgraded from felonies. They look for those things as being important, but for the most part, it's simply the policy of the organization. I have one client that wants to know down to traffic tickets, which I tell them repeatedly, that's ridiculous. You don't need to know that, and they want to know it.
So there's never been a you can't ask rule on any of this stuff?
No.
If I may interrupt, in the state of Massachusetts, there is a law that's now in effect that you are not allowed to ask on an application whether you've been convicted of a felony.
Well, that ties to the old Corey statutes, that's correct. And that's some of the new law that's coming in. There's many places now that are trying to, as I say, they're taking aim at us. They don't want anybody to know that the bad histories of their candidates so they can get a higher labor pool, higher labor numbers, statistics. So in the end.
I have another question. How long does it take to do one of these screens? It sounds like it could be up to $200 for a screen, based on what Nate said and And what he said seemed to reflect your a la carte offering. The more you get, you know, the more it costs. So it's somewhere for a good one between $100 and $200.
Yes.
It has to be done not just by searching a database. You have to have a human being doing it. I want to ask you something else about that. But also, but how long does it take then for a human being to do a check? Because if you want to make someone an offer and it's going to take a month, that could be bad.
Well, that's a great question, too. You know, you poor recruiting people, I really feel for you because you're in the last, you know, you're in the rapid-fire business. You got to get things moving. And the trouble is that
don't
the background...
Don't suck up to us, okay?
What?
Go ahead.
The background check business is troublesome because we have to be ultimately reliant upon the court clerk's counter. If the court clerk can't produce the file that we request over the counter, then we're at the mercy of the court clerk, and everybody has to wait. It's not our fault. We're basically going to the court on your behalf. Now, there are interim steps upon which we can make initial reports to a client, and we know with a disclaimer that it's not a complete background check, but this is what we found. We have to go out and verify it. But generally speaking, for a routine background check, a solid one runs between 24 and 48 hours. It gets dicey and more complicated when the people don't call you back to verify employment and prior education, that sort of thing. It's also problematic.
That's not bad. 2 days? That's not bad.
Yeah, it really isn't. You know, it's not as bad as you think. However, what we get nailed on in our business is, says, well, you know, you had one that took 2 weeks. Well, you know, we tracked it every step of the way. We showed you the phone calls we made. We told you what our researcher said. It's not our fault. We were on top of this thing every minute of every day for that 2 weeks, and you're making it our fault that the clerk didn't come back with the file that we requested that was down in archive section. So,
okay,
you know.
Okay, you've got two designations, CFE and CII. What do those mean?
CFE is Certified Fraud Examiner. Certified International Investigator is CII.
Okay. Now, let me just do an ad. I've got a client that I've never – it's $2 an ad, and I haven't charged him yet because I haven't written a formal ad for him. But his name is Greg Dergarian. I don't think he's listening today, but he runs a company called TempWorks.com, TempWorks.com, and they make staffing software. My buddy, Jerry Albright, is an IT contract recruiter. And if you wanted to go in a business just like Jerry's tomorrow, TempWorks would set you up immediately with all the software you need, plus they'd loan you the money you need to pay your contractors while they're out on the job. TempWorks.com. TempWorks.com. Okay, let me see if there's anything else I have to say. JobSpeak.com used to be my sponsor. Take a look at him, too. Oh, gee. So we got the time. We got the designations. Yeah, if someone wants to hire, they've listened to this show and they want to hire somebody, what should they do?
You're saying what's the process for going through hiring a process?
Yeah, what should they do? Go to the Yellow Pages? No, you are appscreen.com. That's what I wanted to say. APSCREEN. .com. This guy's name is Tom Lawson. He's the boss there. He started this in the industry 32 years ago. But there's other companies as well. Nate Sigma just mentioned them. But Tom, if someone wants to find you, all they have to do is go to appscreen.com. But let's say they wanted to find somebody local. Would they just go to the Yellow Pages and look under what? What would they look under?
Oh, employment screening firms, background checking companies, that sort of thing.
Now, what would you see as a red flag if they didn't have the same kind of designations as you do?
Not necessarily. Really, my designations are probably above and beyond the call of duty. It's very difficult to determine if an employment screening company these days is legitimate because there's so many resellers of other people's databases. And, you know, you have companies that are out there that are saying, we'll do a background check for $29, $39, and it's nationwide. You want to be careful about words like nationwide or area-wide. You never want to throw a wide blanket in anything other than identifying the candidate because every other component of a background check that's conducted has to be area or jurisdiction-specific, or it can only come from a database. That's the big problem with the background checking industry. You want to check their references. You want to find out how long they've been in business. You want to see if they have a business license. You want to see if they have an internet posting that makes sense and it's reasonable, and it identifies what they're actually providing you and the depth of what they're giving you.
Okay, but you said they should belong to certain associations as well.
Yes.
Do they screen you to join that association, or do you just pay your fee and you get the name?
No, the Industry Trade Association problem is that some industry trade associations are very careful about who they let in, and some industry trade associations will take anybody with a heartbeat and a checkbook.
Yeah.
The emerging perception of the National Association of Professional Background Screeners is that we are the only body that is a legitimate body representing the employment screening industry. My position is that the original nature of that body before it changed hands was that it was essentially taking anybody with a heartbeat and a checkbook. It has grown into a better organization, that it does have very high quality people running it now, but the industry is still very fledgling. It's really an industry that only started in the mid to late 1990s. There's a lot of people that are members of that association that are really not qualified to be background screeners. They are background checkers, or they're data sellers, or they're resellers of database services.
Okay, I got a lot of questions. I'm not going to get finished. I don't know if I've got 10 minutes. Maybe I'll bring you on again. I found something interesting. I don't know where I read it, through your site somehow, what I would call decoy admissions, decoy or red herrings. Somebody's asked if they've, you know, got a criminal record or something like that, or if they've got some kind of problems. And what they do is they give you some true information, but it's really only the tip of the iceberg to sort of make you feel you got the stuff. Nobody would, you know, if he's going to reveal that, I mean, he's telling me the real stuff. But in fact, there's much worse stuff that he's hiding. Is that common?
God, that's a fantastic point. You are so right. We see that.
Don't suck
so
up to me. It doesn't
do
you any good, okay?
You're absolutely right. We see that almost every day. Somebody will say, yes, I was convicted of jaywalking. And then you run their background check, and jaywalking was a companion charge to the murder because they were caught jaywalking as running across the street away from the scene of the crime, and they weren't arrested till later for the murder. So you're absolutely right. People send out what we call partial disclosures, and that's almost worse than no disclosure, because they're intending basically to defraud you and to throw you off the track, and they think you're not going to check if they give you something. They throw you a bone and think, well, he's not going to do a background check if I tell him a little bit about myself. He's not going to spend the money, because applicants are aware that background check's done.
Let me switch gears, okay? Now, this is a different, similar psychology, but there's this typical, you know, what's the worst thing that ever happened to you in your career? What's your major weakness? You know, the whole thing that people tell you, all the career coaches, Janice is here, I don't know if she uses this one, but they say, okay, you know, give them something, but something that's not so bad. If you were interviewing someone for their technical ability, which is something you're not really concerned with, I take it, beyond their credentials, what would you do to get them to tell you the real problem, or is it not possible without doing some kind of reference check? If you say, you know, what's your weakness? And again, you know, this typical one, you know, sometimes I get too passionate about my work. I mean, how do you get them to give you the real goods? Is there a technique that you know?
Well, first of all, that's the specific talent of the interviewer. Let's face it. There's some guys can pull blood out of a rock, and some guys who step right over the rock. The answer to your question, I think, may be a little bit askew, but will give your listeners a tremendous tidbit. We in our business call what you're looking for the developed reference. That's when you contact a reference, for example, a personal reference, and you go through your interview questionnaire of 10 or 12 questions. And at the end of the interview, you say, now, Ms. Jones, thank you for helping me with this particular candidate. Could you please give me the name and phone number of two people that also know your friend? And you might only get one, but now you've got an unabashed source that will probably give you a lot of meat and potatoes about the person that you wouldn't get from the reference that has been set up to answer the question.
No, we call that a blind reference check. You don't get
right.
The name from the person. Is that legitimate?
Because
sure. Then you're letting people know. For instance, we're usually working. We're headhunters. Not everybody here, but I am, and there's a lot of the people who listen to the show. And they'll be recruiting somebody who's already in a job and just offering something better. If
yes.
You call too many people and say, I'm doing a reference check on this person, that lets the cat out of the bag that they're in the market, and they
well,
might
sure.
Not want people to know. Is
you're
that
not gonna
could
do
I
it.
Get sued for that?
You could get sued for it, especially if on the application the person says do not contact prior employer or do not contact references that I haven't given consent for. So that's a very difficult thing to manage. Essentially, when I talk about a developed reference, it's where we have permission and where the job specification calls for it, and usually with an employment position that has an annual salary of $75,000 or more. That's a little more on the top end, because you really want to investigate those guys. You're handing the reins of your business over to them, essentially. But
did
no.
You write two books called The Psychology of Auto Mechanics for Women?
No, I taught a course at California State University in Sacramento when I was going to college. That was what was called.
Do women, is there something special about, that women should know about auto mechanics? I mean,
women,
like, what's going on there?
Women in those days used to get taken advantage of by their local repair shops, and what I did is I taught them how to tune up their own cars and change their own oil and how to speak the jargon when they went in to get the work done at an auto shop. And they, every student I ever had in that particular class line would say to me, my gosh, you can't believe how much money you've saved me over the last couple of months just in car
so
repair.
So you are already involved in this kind of thing. Don't let people jerk you around. That's your thing, right?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
That's your mission in life. Okay. Is there anything you want to talk about that I haven't hit? Because there's stuff I could still bring up. Like, let me ask you this. You know Dominique Strauss-Kahn, the DSK, the guy who got charged with raping the chambermaid in New York, and he got out of that. Now he's in trouble in France again. He's claiming that he didn't know that the orgies he went to, that the girls there were being paid. And so... I saw you have people, rich people come to you and they say, I want to go out with this person. Can you do a background check on my boyfriend or girlfriend, right?
You bet.
Okay. So is a rich person or a prominent person, are they kind of, would they ever go to somebody and say, who are the other guests going to be at this? I want to make sure I'm not arrested later on for complicity in pimping, which this guy is actually in jail for.
You know, it's funny. I started my business in Westwood, California, which is right next to Hollywood. And we have lots of different things that used to come up like that very situation. In fact, what some of my aerospace clients would do when they would host investor parties is we would do due diligence on all the people that would be attending the parties to see if, in fact, they should be there or if they were spies for other companies trying to get a line on what the company did and what they were selling.
Now, how'd you do that?
Well, we would do primarily, that's a different kind of background check. We would do criminal checks. We would do civil litigation histories. You couldn't run a credit report, of course, because you didn't have consent. We would look into the background of the resumes that were presented because most of the parties then you would be able to know the people that were coming and there would be people who knew of those people and you'd make phone calls to determine what their current employment status was, for example, or are they unemployed and looking for a job and letting everybody think that they're really the CEO of another competitor. So those are kind of a different style of background check. But, you know, they basically relied upon public record checks, and those are all absolutely legitimate. You can conduct that without consent because it's a matter of public record. It's just a matter of knowing where to go and what to get in order to serve your client's specific request.
Okay, we're going to be going now to the after show. You can't stay on. I can't stay on. Jerry, who usually runs it, is not here. Nate Sigma is going to handle that. And thanks for coming on. I really enjoyed you. You'll come back sometime, maybe. Thank you!
Well then, how is everyone today?
Hey, Nate.
Hey, how are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Kathy. Good to hear your voice.
It's good to hear your voice. I'm going to call you later, I think, maybe.
Oh, excellent. So it's been quite an interesting little show today. I guess I'll start off quick with just a quick thought in regards to that stuff. I find it kind of interesting that this particular guest spent as much time as he did in the past doing what he did and trying to get as much information that he can in regards to a client, their possible omissions and stuff, but yet thinks that going out in regards to the social media aspect is like silly because you can't verify the information. I mean, can't you just verify what's there? I mean, we all as recruiters do it anyways. I mean, we go out there to take a look at it because the thoughts and concepts, it's all 90% perception, right, in regards to what the client's looking at. So if the client's looking at the perception of someone sitting on someone's lawn at 3 in the morning, you know, after smoking 10 pounds of dope, I mean, you're an idiot as a candidate if you're not putting up any kind of potential blocks to prevent outside people from looking at your profiles, but... That's my thoughts on that process, but anybody else have something to say about that?
What kind of bothered me, I mean, I live in the area where, or I grew up in the area where he's talking about, but is that I don't like it when you have to pay separate for each little search. I mean,
right.
that problem.
The concept is, like, the programs and stuff that I work on from my perspective, I have to do certain types of search because I'm working for a client. So, I work with a very large pharmaceutical client and a number of Blue Crosses across the country. So part of our background check procedures that we have with them is that, you know, they are all reimbursed to us by our clients anyways, but we have to do it. Especially in the pharmaceutical place, because a lot of people are concerned in regards to other things that are out there. So we pay a la carte. I mean, you'll generally find, I mean, most of the people, even the people we bring on here, will just do, just a regular background check. We look at 7 years, local, state, and federal criminal records check, Social Security verification, and address verification for the people that are listed there. And those will generally run, depending upon where you are, you know, $50 to $75. And I guess from that perspective, it's perception. If the client wants to do something of that nature, if you're offering it as a service, you can build it into your price if you're doing permanent placement. But as contractors, we're doing whatever we feel is due diligence for our state to bring someone on our payroll because we do everything W-2 anyway. So, but who knows?
I have a question.
Sure.
And I was a little bit late to the show, and I was did he mention pricing? I know I asked a couple of times. I think it was mentioned a couple of times, but miraculously, every time it was mentioned, my phone rang, so I didn't get an answer.
He said everything is. See, everything. This is what, Travis?
No, this is Jeremy Worthington in Columbus.
Oh, Jeremy, I'm sorry. Yeah, Jeremy, basically the price structure that runs out there for most of these organizations will run what they call a la carte. So, you know, this state records check is $10, this one is $50, this one is $5. For each, you know, this, to do the full kit and caboodle, like when I go to a client, it's all a la carte. So mine is generally anywhere between $100 to $200 based upon where the candidate is and what each state charges for something.
Well, I wrote some stuff down that we can share. I mean, he said that, this is Jeff Lipschultz, he said that for education, employment, and criminal, it's going to start about $75. And let's say you went to one college, if you want to check that, it's $12 extra.
Right.
If he had two jobs, then it's $24. That's $12 each. So he's given a scenario. It just sounds like if with a basic candidate that we would deal with that went to one college and had a few different jobs, and you live in a few different places, it's going to be around $100, and then it's going to go up from there the more you want to check. So it's a
And that's not that bad. The issue here is, and this is just kind of coming from my angle, is client sits down and says, you know, I need to do a background check to you, as well, because I'm a job search coach. And it's going to be a little bit challenging because then I have to know what type of and how, you know, how wide and deep that particular organization that they're interviewing with, how wide and deep do they search or do they go back?
Right.
Does that make sense? So then I wish there was more of a cumulative.
Well, the law basically, Jeremy, from that perspective, it's 7 years. Is the federal law. So you can go back 7 years, local, state.
Well, I think he's alluding to if this person lived in, like, several different places, are you going to go to the extent to check every single place that person has been or just the most recent? And I would say, Jeremy, that, you know, you start with a basic baseline for your, you know, that you're comfortable with, and then you just, like he kind of said, you just kind of throw that out there that this is baseline, and we can go beyond that. He'll be happy to extend the services if you need to, depending on the type of employers that your clients are going to be going to.
And what's the turnaround time?
24 to 48 hours. He made it sound like it was pretty fast.
Generally speaking, but you have to be careful because certain states and certain things take longer. See, I actually work with my pharmaceutical client in 26 locations, and I can get them quickly turned around, like in California, in 2 days. All right, but Massachusetts, because of the Corey laws and other things that are out there, a true Massachusetts background check takes 3 months.
He said we do a simulated one,
which is counties.
You can get interim reports, so you could at least know where you're at. He won't save it all up till it's all completely done. You can get it as you go.
Yeah, most
and
places
so
you have
really
something
long.
That you log into, so you can log into these sites and just take a look at it from that perspective. But
sounds pretty good.
Yeah, so what do you guys think about, I mean, the one thing that he might kind of mentioned in regards to what's out there, you know, and I've always been kind of on both sides of the fence, both as an employer and both as an individual, this credit concept. I mean, you know, like the one thing he said was, well, you know, if I ask to borrow $100 from a guy and he doesn't pay me back, then he's a creep. But are we comfortable as a group of individuals to, like, you know, put our candidates through, you know, like a credit reference check? I mean, there's one thing in regards to, I mean, I guess I'm kind of curious, you know.
I think
that's a good question, Nate. And I would say that when you look at the type of job you're talking about too, that has a lot to do with it. If it's anything where the person's going to be touching money or is making financial decisions, I think that's a no-brainer. I think if you're talking about a developer, then you have to maybe ask the person, how'd you fall into this trap in the first place or what have you? You know, some of these folks, it's just a bad luck situation.
Are you comfortable as a human being to ask that question? Like, I mean, do you want someone looking into your credit check to determine whether or not you're a good recruiter?
If I'm touching money, I would expect, if I'm interviewing for a job where I'm touching money and my job is financial, I would expect you to ask me.
Yeah, and some of those places you have to be bonded. But, like, you're a recruiter or a job search coach, and I come to you and I say, I want to bring you on board as a recruiter, but I'm going to do a credit check.
No, you know
what? What are your thoughts?
I think that's almost bordering on OFCCP noncompliance. You know, I don't think you can do that. And you know, personally, I've been affected due to a divorce. And do I necessarily want to advertise that? Well, I just have, but... You know, it doesn't mean I'm a bad person and can't handle money. So, you know.
It's circumstantial. I mean,
here's an interesting story because people always say that. Protection is 90% of law. When I was growing up, I used to work for a data entry firm in the state of Pennsylvania. And the data entry firm was responsible for taking FIA applications. Now, it's a higher education assistance program where you basically fill out the forms. I'm sure any of you guys in college have, you know, had to fill these things out before in the past. And they always just say, you know what, just attach to the record, you know, an explanation if you know, because it all goes back upon the previous years of information that's out there. So they said, just attach to the record a reason why you're in such dire financial things. Well, I can tell you point blank that for years I was told to remove those and put them in the trash. Okay, so my problem is with this is people don't pay attention. The minute that information is there, perception is key. The minute that a client sees that you might have some bad background stuff, I mean bad credit check stuff, they're not going to care. They're going to choose somebody else.
I know, and that's
I personally believe
unfair.
That it's the government's responsibility to step in and protect us from these people looking at this information. So.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big Fight Club fan. I think they should just blow up all those buildings. But you know,
but the other issue is we work for our clients too. I mean, we can't black and white about this. I mean, if our clients, if we fail to present the best candidate, and that this person turns out, well, how would you feel if that person goes into that CFO job and ends up embezzling millions of dollars?
No. But see, my thing is I totally agree with you with accounting type positions. I'm 100%. If you're going to be handling money and you've chosen that career as your path and you have access to money and funds, then yes, I believe 100%. But I'm a recruiter. I don't have access to funds within this organization. I don't think it's these people's any of their business to go.
Yeah,
but
it's not pertinent. I agree. It's not necessarily. It's a bias. Just like social media would be a bias in a negative sense if you're not validating what you're seeing.
Well, right. But see, the thing is I've always been a big fan, and anyone, you know, I mean, I've only been on the show for about 6 months or so, but anybody can tell you. My big thing from that perspective is you know, Kathy Maness, your email is, you know, kathymaness@live.com or whatever, right? That's one thing. But I'm always encouraged, and I'm sure all you job search coaches do too, to have a separate email address, number one. Okay, to keep that information separate if you want to hide your personal social media stuff, unless you've built, you know, your background around it. But secondly, I love all these people who throw out these, you know, emails, you know, like, you know, ilikelollipops@gmail.com. I mean, come on, you know, I mean, there's nothing more professional than looking at, you know, so perception is key. And that's always the big thing from that perspective, that if you don't want that information that's out there, then you're not going to find it, you know, because you need to know how to hide it.
This is Chris Fleek, and somebody just made the point about validating data. And I think that's my stance on using a credit report is that if you use it just as a data point and make decisions based on that data point, I don't think that's necessarily valid. But I think that using it as a discussion with the candidate to say, hey, you know, this report flagged something for us. Let's talk through it because this could have impact on your position. You know, then you give the candidate an opportunity to explain the situation. But I'm not so comfortable using it just as, okay, this score or this thing flagged it, therefore you're ineligible for hire.
Right.
Right, I think we're in agreement.
True.
Yeah.
True. Kathy, what's your scores for today?
I liked it today. I'd have to say 90 for both. 90 for both. Yeah, I didn't like being cut off, but you know what? I butt in too much, so I think he should have turned the mics off. I mean, I would have.
I wasn't too bad. I actually kind of liked it. I think he asked. I kind of knew it was coming because he asked me before the show because I said I was going to read through the questions like Maureen did. He asked for my area code, and I was like, oh. I know it's coming today, you know.
I thought that it would be
Def, what do you got there?
You're asking my opinion? I think it, you know, and I never give out 90s and stuff like that, and Animal knows it, but I'd have to go with 90. Maybe 90, 100 for the guest, because the guest knows his stuff, answered the questions when asked, although he did waffle a little bit on one of the questions about lying and stuff. I was trying to prompt, you know, lies versus omissions, and he kind of sneaked around that, so maybe I'm 90. I don't know. Maybe there's a legal reason why he was answering it that way. I'm not sure. And Animal, I think he took a bold move and changed up his format. He wasn't yelling and screaming either, and he was able to ask a lot of questions, and keep it moving. Towards the very end, he dipped into his history, and I was like, he was in the middle of asking him about something else that was really intriguing to me, and he wanted to sneak in something before the show was over. I was like, wait, go back to that thing he was just talking about. But otherwise,
yeah, I know that Heather Coleman had put out there a couple things there in regards to social media checks and whether or not, you know, from a legal perspective, another thing. And I know that there was a couple of people that talked about socialintel.com, which is a site that does that. Interesting point in regards to social media. One of the pharmaceutical clients that I work with, here's an interesting topic from that perspective. They actually hire a company, and it may be this one, I don't know, that specifically does research into people's social media prospects as an additional position for those who work in the animal laboratories. And the reason that they do this is because they're actually specifically looking to see if they belong to any nature organizations like PETA, you know, and their concept being that if they do, they don't want those people there. But I didn't know what people thought about
it. You can ask them the same questions, too. I guess they could lie about it, but...
Yeah, but I mean, they actually pay. Like, they pay. I mean, they pay for it, so I mean, it's not the candidate pays for it. They sign a separate release, and they alert people ahead of time that this check is going to be done, you know.
By the way, everyone is aware, the guest did just tweet out his full thoughts on using social media in background search, and he put a link on there to you, Nate, and Animal. So if anyone wants to favor that tweet and look at it later, you might want to catch it now.
Interesting. So, yeah,
I'm not sure if he's listening in or not. But,
Well, because I think there was a bunch of questions that people posted on the show about it. So I have that, you know, that perspective, you know, in regards to that. I'm hoping, and then he's not listening. And if he is, he should hang up the phone because we'll know. We'll contact a background check company.
Yeah, we're going to check on
your IP record.
There goes my high regard for him and potential system,
I know.
business. Oops.
I don't know. See, my problem is my one opinion. You know, I like the guy. He knows what he's talking about. See, and I deal with these guys on a daily basis. As part of my job here as ops manager for our firm, I go out, and Kathy knows because I talk to them about sourcing and stuff. You know, I go out and look for alternatives. And one of the things I have to do is I have to do these background checks. I don't want to because it's just it takes away from my time, but I have to, you know. So I have talked to a variety of them. I've never seen this guy's, you know, company before, but I've talked to other ones. There's Castle Branch and there's PEI, and there's a number of that I've talked to over time. Some are good, some are bad. But my one problem that I have is that it's hard to be in that industry and not get jaded. And that's my biggest problem with this guy. This guy's been doing it for 32 years. And my one problem in regards to that is he's so jaded in regards to, you know, well, people have bad credit. They're not good employers. And the driver check. I mean, come on, seriously? I mean, a DUI, if it is a criminal check, is going to show up on their criminal possession. You know, we already have a hard enough time as recruiters of getting people into these industries. I mean, I have so many people who turn me down because, you know, they have to do a credit check, you know, or they have to do a driver's check. If you're not taking part or driving that vehicle, you know, then do you understand? If you're not driving...
Yeah, and he made reference to that our recruiters, you know, the recruiters have a hard enough time, you know, getting people in there and all that. He alluded to it a little bit, knowing that we tend not to dig hard enough because we don't want to find something.
Right. Well, no, and that's fine. Yeah, but I dig enough so that I know, especially from a social media aspect, because if I'm not doing it, they are.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm protecting my arse, if you will. But I don't know.
You're I think you're right as far as being jaded, because when you talked about what did he call it? It wasn't omission, but it was like people were purposely lying about their background.
Right.
Well, you know, I've moved so many times, and I don't remember all the addresses from, you know, 20 years ago. I probably wouldn't put it on there.
Right.
You know.
Well, see, the funny thing is, and here's the fun thing. Let's pay real close attention in regards to this, because the federal law out there says that I'm allowed to check your background check for every place that you've lived in the last 7 years, okay? That doesn't mean for criminal actions taking place in the last 7 years. That means if, Kathy, if you lived in Boston, Mass. For the last 5 years and you lived in New York for the 2 years previous to that, I check your whole background for both New York and Boston. Okay, I have a guy in Florida. I did a background check. He worked for NASA, had top secret clearance. He lived in Florida his entire life. I went back to go check his background. Do you know what popped on his background check? A felony conviction for hitting a police officer 28 years ago.
Wow.
28 years. Okay,
wait,
so that's the concept that it – well, he had a police officer. Now, he explained the situation, and we got past it, and he's since had a top secret clearance, so my client didn't really care. It was an odd little thing, but it was a felony conviction. He was 20 at the time, and he said, you know, it was something stupid. Now, the point of the matter here from this perspective is there's a number of state legislations, including Massachusetts, that says not only can I not only just check the last 7 years, I can only see, and the state is only going to provide information for any misdemeanor that happened in the last 7 years. If it's older than that, it doesn't show up. Felonies, only 12 years. So just an interesting thought to throw out there.
Can I give out my scores real quick?
Yeah, go ahead. Who is this?
This is Travis.
Oh, hey, Travis. How
I'm going to give him 95 both.
Okay, cool.
I like the format. I like the – well, just the flow of the show is a lot better today than what I've seen it in the past. I was going to ask the guy, you know, the worst case he's ever seen, if he's seen a situation that was just so ridiculous that him and the other guys at the office were just, you know, chuckling over it. I guess for the sake of levity. And then the other thing I was going to ask is if he'd ever been offered a huge fee to help somebody disappear.
I know, and I felt bad too, because Brenda, you put out there, and I'm not sure if you're listening, one of the very first questions that Brenda came up with and I was trying to cut in the beginning was, and I kind of almost felt like I didn't know if I wanted to see what this guy thought, but, you know, how do you disappear, you know? I think it was more geared towards the social media aspect, you know, like if there's something bad out there, you know, in the social media sphere, how do you get rid of that information? That's, I think, more of what her question was from that perspective. But it, definitely interesting concept. Before I forget, Chris, what is your scores there?
I'm going to go 95 for the guest and 92 for animal. The only thing I would have liked to have seen, I love the shift to keeping the peanut gallery quiet during the first part of the show. But there were not very many opportunities to jump in and ask questions because it was flowing so smoothly. So,
right.
So it did sort of limit some of that dialogue that I think we're now
getting
on.
So there you go. So an interesting concept from the show perspective is to keep the first half hour to himself or whatever, then 15 minutes to jump into the questions, but maybe just make the last 15, 10 minutes just pure question and answer.
Well,
yes.
He did ask around a quarter to the hour, you know, does anyone have any questions? And the few piped in, I think maybe he just – shifted back off of that and started asking more of his own questions.
Right, there was the one question, but then from then on it was very smoothly flowing, and so there were really no openings.
There you go. Jeremy, while I got you out there. Jeremy still with us, or did he have to jump off for a phone?
Better check those tweets, because you're getting a lot of scores on tweets to you.
Yeah, Nate. I've gotten a couple of them. I've got animal listed up there, so I've got I got Valentino's.
Yeah,
I've got... I got Jerry's. I got Brenda's. Anybody else I'm missing out there?
Well, and then guess what? You got Jerry.
Yeah, I got Jerry. Yeah,
88 and 82.
Yeah, I'll
be curious to hear what Jerry has to say about the show with the peanut gallery not being there and him not being there. Is Jerry part of the problem? Does Jerry bring down the score?
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
For the host.
You know, from the pre-recorded perspective, I will make my official statement here. I'm not here looking to replace Jerry. So I'll just throw that out there. So
that eliminates my second question.
Oh, there you go. Although I do encourage you all to come back around on the 14th. I will be the guest on the 14th of March. So
the guest. Okay.
I have to reach out to Animal to see what we're going to talk about, because I'm good on this back end of the stuff, you know, and yelling and talking and screaming at people, but you know, in regards to their thoughts and processes. But, you know, I've been in the industry for about 15 years and have had fun and have a lot of thoughts and concepts, but I'm not entirely sure, you know, I don't know.
So
maybe we'll get this guy
about.
To go look
right,
at my background.
Right.
Pick a topic you want to talk about, and you'll be fine. Take ownership.
Well, I said we could just have Thomas go do my background and find out my skeletons in my closet, you know.
And talk about
like
that.
I murdered DSK's prostitute 10 years ago.
Oh, I have a question. Does anybody want to be a guest on the 21st of March for about a half an hour?
Okay. Oh, you got the other half?
Where?
No, Shally's going to be on.
Oh, Shally's going to be on. I guess we'll
anybody,
have to post
any
it
takers?
Up.
Any takers? Any takers?
Everybody be quiet. Everybody knows what it's like to be on the other end of Animal Sharps.
I haven't been, and I won't be. Does anybody else want to be? Please. He wanted
to
me to find someone.
Oh, really? Yeah, we'll have to take a look out there and see what's up.
Yeah. The word
anybody
out,
else I missed, Arthur, for scores?
Does that mean if we can't find anybody, it's got to be you, and you don't really want to do it? Is that what I'm hearing?
That's what I'm kind of thinking.
There you go. You know what?
If yeah, I'm suggesting everybody just remain quiet. Don't volunteer. It'll be all right. We'll get her through it.
We'll get her through it, yeah. We'll provide you with whatever afterwards, you know, some Valium and some sedatives. And, yeah, there you go. Hey, Kathy. Yeah. Hi, pretty colors. So this guy, definitely an interesting concept. You know, in regards to, it's interesting to find one of the people that are out there that kind of started this industry. The guest looked great, talked great. He was a little dated, a little concerned in regards to some of his concept. That omission and lie thing kind of got my blood boiling a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah.
You know, I hate people who look at data points and don't look at anything else, you know. You know, from that perspective. But.
Well, hey, I'll throw the same question out. Brenda and I were having a little discussion off on Twitter about this. And well, what is your this collective group here? What has been your experience? The same question. You know, lies versus omissions. Let's try and simplify things. And you know, if they're omitting something, they're probably lying. Okay, so that's kind of taken care of, maybe. At least for this discussion.
You think so? Because what if an address shows up and that's it?
Well, I'm not worried about the addresses. I think, you know, it's 7 years. We're just talking about 7 years here. So most
that's
people
true.
Know where they've lived for 7 years.
True.
I don't want you to tell me where you lived 14 years ago. I don't care.
But I'm not sure I agree with that. The seven-year issue is for people who are in, for lack of a better term, upper-level positions requiring significant education, that may be true. Maybe it's the positions that we're all recruiting for.
You're going to tell me that lots of people move around in 7 years.
There are tons of people that are very transient in the workforce.
Okay, so let me keep simplifying the question. Let's just eliminate the where you live thing for a second. How many are you find? What percentage of your candidates you find that are blatantly just lying about education, where they've worked, and I'm not even going to say necessarily the circumstances of their departure, because I think everybody kind of talks about layoffs.
Well, that's a given.
That's a given.
You can't get down to it. I mean, if you're giving a reference, it's giving you, you know, who's talking back behind your back, then you're doing something wrong. But
right. So let's just say, how often are you finding they're lying about some of the basics, education, where they've worked, positions they've held, like we heard about, you know, from I think it was Janice
right.
or somebody. Yeah, how often does that happen?
I deal with about. Let's take a look here, because I think the last time I looked, because I'm in a very unique industry in which I'm not spending a whole lot of voice time with people, but when I go through the whole process, I think I hire about 24 to 30 people a year, you know, for my clients,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've done so over the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say I can count on less than one hand the number of people who have specifically gone out of their way. As a matter of fact, I can only recall one in which a woman who actually lied, and here's an interesting one, you know, from a background check perspective, she actually went out and started her own Avon business, provided her tax identification number for her Avon business. This is her Social Security. And she did this specifically because she was trying to hide three tech felony convictions for writing bad checks, supposedly to get away from a bad husband. But that's the only one that I've ever really had. I have a ton of white lies. I probably maybe find 20 to 30% of the people who just kind of forget something. But in all honesty, when it comes down to it, the background check that I'm doing, the company comes to me and says, okay, we found these additional addresses and these AKAs. Never really seen an AKA that was completely out of whack. I think I had a guy that had like a Chinese name and had something. It was like CM versus Chi, you know, C-H-I-I, you know. So we just tell him, go ahead and run it. You know, because the client's paying for it anyways. And I never see anything that pops on those. The people.
What about other folks on the call?
Yeah.
And in addition to that, is it? Do you see a pattern to what pay range they're in at all? Is there a pattern to that? You know, the lower ones, or you know, I don't want to be biased or anything, but do you find that it's in a certain pay bracket too? Anyone else with lies?
Yeah, this is Chris again. I see significantly more omissions of fact and or lies on the lower level of pay positions that I'm working with. But what's interesting when you bring up pay is that I often see people on their job applications. I'm privy to the actual official application that people fill out for one of my clients. And one of the misstatements of fact that I see quite often is the salary range that they've been at in their past positions. People are inflating those numbers, and that comes out in the wash as well.
How does that come out in the wash?
Well, when the background check folks that we work with verify past employment, they also do verify past compensation.
They're able to do that?
Yeah.
Well, because
he didn't talk. He didn't talk about that at all.
No.
Well, because there's part of the background check thing that's out there. People do, you can pay, like I pay $15 per reference check, and they'll just ask the questions of the HR people if the HR companies are willing to provide that information.
A lot of times
because you're releasing it anyways. They'll ask the question, you know, why did this person leave? Did they leave on good terms? What were they making when they left, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, some of the corporations I've worked at this point now, they just say, we can only verify they worked here from this date to this date, not the reasons for their departure, not their salary. Even they'll maybe tell you the position they held, which might trigger something, may not. But a lot of them just don't want to get involved anymore. The other thing that was brought up that I thought was interesting was references of references. You know, when you're talking to somebody, ask them name and phone numbers of two people that would know your candidate. And then, again, you have to circle back. I think that's what they were talking about right before they switched to something trivial. It was, do you have permission to talk to people that they haven't given you permission to talk to? And the way I handle that is I'll go to, like, for example, LinkedIn, and I'll see other people that they know, you know, and you can tell how they know them, previous, you know, employment, you know, work together, whatever, you know, big random people, of course. And then you go back to your candidate, and you just ask for permission, but you say, I'm calling this person today. Just want you to know. Any problems with that? That way it's like, okay, I'll give you about 10 minutes to prep them that I'm going to be calling, but it's not somebody, or an hour, whatever, but it's not somebody that they gave me. It wasn't their first choice. So I feel better that I'm asking a rep, and I tell my client that. I said, I checked his references, but I have to check my own, which is true. I picked them, but I still got permission to call that person. Anybody do something similar to that? Or is that a good idea?
Well, I mean, if you're doing that, then it's just like you're finding references for them to use, but if you're still obtaining permission for them, I think what this guy was saying from his perspective is he goes out there. I don't think, the way I'm getting it, until somebody brought it up, I think he just goes around. You know, like if I know somebody, I mean, but it's the same concept. You know, how about this? If I know that you work for a different recruiting agency and my buddy works over there, it's nothing for me to just call him and ask him, right? I mean, it wasn't an official reference. I just happened to know, oh, you worked at, you know, XYZ. You know, I know Brian at XYZ.
Right.
I want to call Brian and say, hey, Brian, what
Well, the issue that was brought up is that if this guy is doing some kind of confidential job search and you start talking to people that know people to know people, especially some of the industries I work in, they all know each other. It's incestuous. But you could get this guy fired for looking for a job. So if you're not checking with those references, you're not checking with your candidate, I mean, you may have screwed your own candidate, and then you're, you know, who's going to want to work with you? He did, that's where he was jaded. I think his answer was, oh, well.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to go and call those people regardless, and if you're doing a job search, well, be prepared to be outed on that. I don't think that's right.
No.
I mean,
but
I try
with a completely different, you know, sphere of people out there, too. you know, because he works in aerospace, and the problem is that most of these people in the aerospace industry are used to top secret clearance type stuff anyway. So I don't think as many people deal with that, if that makes any sense. But I think that pretty much wraps us up. We got about 1 minute left here. Any last minute thoughts from anyone before this cuts out on us?
It's a great job, Nate.
Good job, yeah.
Yep, good job with the after show.
Yeah.
Make sure you all come back and pick on me on the 14th. I'll be ready to answer all your hard-hitting questions.
We're in my calendar right now, Nate.
There you go. Actually, we'll have attendance
break.
At a high, all
a,
high level. Everybody
out there, Nate. It's
what's
over
up?
Spring break in Texas, so you may not. Might be a quiet show.
I don't know. Well, today was supposed to be quiet too, and look, we ended up, you know, driving this thing out of everywhere. I think we got more scores than I hear Jerry get like another time.
I guess
that comes with a guest. So,
right.
Well, what I liked about the after show is we had a really good educational conversation about all of this. I think it was great.
Yeah, it wasn't just about scores. That's true.
Right.
Yep.
It was great.
That's what this is about. We're supposed to be helping each other and sharing knowledge.
Bill was okay. Animal was okay. But the show itself, I just...
Same old thing.
As a recruiter, there's nothing I'm going to now take to my desk. And I am in a state of constant listening, learning, and applying. That's my thing. I got nothing from this show.
Oh,
I'm not going to do anything new. That's what I'm looking for in my learning phase of my career.
Jerry,
wow.
That's just so Jerry.
That is so Jerry.
So jaded. Jaded Jerry. Aren't you supposed to be a Van Halen man?
Yeah, when does that start?
Oh.
Like at 1 o'clock?
Oh, wait, hold on. I think somebody's messing with us. I have a feeling that I've heard that topic before, and I'm pretty sure that was a recording.
I think so, too. I think Animal's
having... Oh, Jerry.
Typical Jerry response. I think it was a recording from someone previously.
Of Jerry?
With us. Yeah.
Jerry, are you
Jerry's
there?
On the road to Van Halen.
Jerry, are you there or not?
No, Animal.
Animal. Shame on you.
Yeah, well, he runs around looking for a check that says yes.
Hurry up, Animal. Shame
All
on
right,
you.
Guys.
I'm a big man now, and I don't have to be nice to people unless I want to.
And with that, Nate?
Good night, everyone. Have a great day.
All right, bye now.
Yeah.
All right, take care, guys.